Economics on KGO 810. This week, we are catching rides with Techonomics, the earthly kind and the spaceship kind. Host Jason Middleton looks at a new car sharing company that's launching in San Francisco, its 10th market in the United States. And Maven has a big backer in General Motors. Also this week, just exactly what is the best way to build a better spaceship? The author of a new book, How to Make a Spaceship, talks about interstellar ambitions. First up is a new take on the age-old advice that the customer is always right. Cultural anthropologists are having more and more influence with corporations as they influence corporate bottom lines. All that and a little more on this week's Techonomics on KGO 810.
Welcome to this week's Techonomics. I am your host, Jason Middleton. Well, you heard the lady. This week, we have a luxury ride-sharing startup and tips on how to make a spaceship. Well, not for you, but a spaceship company. That's later. But first, we start this week with anthropology. And likely, you're conjuring up in your mind right now images of ancient cultures or Margaret Mead books. We're veering off of that track, though. The four sub-studies of anthropology are sociocultural, physical, archaeological, and linguistics. But we're adding a fifth this week, corporate anthropology. And it doesn't get the sensational headlines that microdosing LSD does, but corporate anthropology is a growing field in Silicon Valley and elsewhere. Intel, for instance, has an in-house cultural anthropologist. And Microsoft is reportedly the second largest employer of anthropologists in the world, according to Business Insider. Corporate executives have dashboards that they watch, of course, and teraflops of data to process, of course. But corporate anthropologists have a different role when it comes to affecting the bottom line. Anthropologists find, if not represent, customers as businesses find ways to grow in areas that big data tends to gloss over. There is often a very wide and very valuable gap between what customers want and what companies think customers want.
The brain is wonderful. It hates to learn new things. And so if I throw them new data, the first action is, well, you didn't see it well.
This week, we have two parts to one interview with a leading cultural anthropologist, someone who has guided her clients to more fertile fields of customer satisfaction and revenue. Here's the beginning of our chat.
It's Andy Simon, and I'm president of Simon Associates Management Consultants.
Dr. Simon, there are a couple of things, two legs on the stool, if you will, and we'll probably add a third by the end of the interview. But the first one I want to start with is the corporate anthropology thing, right? Assessing your competition in business, maybe going to a conference here and there, seeing what other people are doing. You've taken that to another level because a lot of entrepreneurs might come away with, hey, that's a decent idea. I might be able to incrementally gain on that. Your take is a little bit more extreme. Can you help me extrapolate?
Well, you had two wonderful entrees in here. First, anthropology applied to business is just coming into its own. And part of this is the application of something developed on small-scale societies that people might know, like coming of age in Samoa that Margaret Mead did, or Trobriand Islanders. And how can you apply it to business? And so as I begin to work with companies, I say, step out and begin to look at your business with fresh eyes as if it was a foreign, small-scale society. What's really going on here? People can't tell you. You have to observe. The problem is once you get inside and that wonderful line, this is the way we do it here, takes over.
Yes.
People are so happy with habits. And then what happens is their market changes and they're still doing the habits. And so we work with companies that need or want to change because, by and large, nobody's taught how to change. And so by stepping out and both playing really interesting anthropology, hanging out with your customers, when was the last time you spent a day in the life of your customer? And watch what they did, not because you want to sell them something, but you really want to understand the essence of what they're doing. And then step back and say, what could we do to help them?
Okay.
And they often start with the question, what if you did this? Or how could you do that? And it's always the unintended things that come out of that observation. I also urge my clients not to outsource their eyes to me, because if I see it, they won't know what it meant. This is all about meaning. Mm-hmm. It's not facts. It's meaning.
Well, let's go back to that one for a second. Sure. What does that exactly mean? Because I think that a company might reach out to you and bring you in as the consultant to be that objective observer. And then we'll get into how change is so easy to implement after you leave, and then how what you leave behind gets implemented. So let's go back to what you see and how that gets understood.
Well, when you go out, you have no theory. You really don't know what you're going to find. And so in one case, in my book, On the Brink, I have a client go out with me to all of his clients, and we meet with CEOs, CFOs, people he normally doesn't talk to. He usually works with the purchasing or the R&D folks. And we just sit there and we say, tell us what's a trend going on in your business. One happened to be a battery design company. What's going on with power? What's happening? And I would hear things coming out of the discussion like, Mark, can't you do it faster? And I'd walk out and Mark said, what is he talking about? He gives me the specs and I build it. I said, but he asked you for faster. I said, well, he doesn't build that in spec, so how would I know? And then in one case, I said to them, who's your competition? We'll build their batteries. And they said, we'll fire you. Power is my competitive advantage. And I said to Mark, did you know power was his competitive advantage? He said, I've never seen the product used. We just build the batteries.
I see.
And so I use that as an explanation. I can take you through a lot of cases like that where I take them with me because I'll hear something and they'll discount it if they weren't there. The brain is wonderful. It hates to learn new things. And so if I throw them new data, let me tell you what I saw when I was out in the field. The first action is, well, you didn't see it well, or the consultant doesn't really know. So I take them with me, and they learn to be a little bit like an anthropologist, listening differently.
Uh-huh.
For this particular client, Mark finally heard something that was an aha moment, which is exactly what happens with the brain. He heard one of these clients he's worked with for a long time said, Mark, it's not about the battery. I want lighter, longer, stronger power solutions. And Mark said, that's what you've been saying, Andy, huh? Yeah, they don't want what you're doing.
I see.
And they want what you could do.
Right.
And it opened up a whole new integrated power solution strategy, grew his business, sold his business, and it wasn't because he didn't do good things. He just didn't see what was coming.
So you're fomenting and gleaning from new conversations. I've often heard of mission creep when it comes to certain projects and things. Is this a good version of mission creep, I guess you'd say? Or is this just basically a discovery meeting? I mean, sometimes when a consultant comes in, everybody sits at the table and says, okay, let's just discover what everybody's needs are and we'll work backwards.
But you can't ask them. You know, Henry Ford's great quote, if I had asked people how to improve transportation, they would have told me to make the horses go faster.
Yes.
And I'm a horse person. You don't make horses go faster. No. Remember when the car came out, they put barbed wire and threw stones at it.
Yes.
So the inherent beauty of it wasn't even apparent there. So to your point, sitting around the table, I'd much rather take him out exploring with us. And when we go out and hang out, watch people actually solving problems or not, or doing the go-arounds. You know, Undercover Boss is some of my best advertising.
Is that
and
right?
I'm surprised that more companies don't do it. Well, if you go undercover and pretend you're a participant, you know, what could you learn from watching without assuming you know what it is they're trying to do?
Right. So you're filling your data buckets with stuff you never would have really encountered because you wandered out of the C-suite.
Exactly. And go. I mean, entrepreneurs are fascinating because they start out really strong and then get stuck.
Yes.
Because they got it, but they don't see what's coming. And big companies stall. You know, 85% of the Fortune 500 companies have stalled at some point.
Right. And now you've pivoted back to the original question, which I'm glad we got around to because I want to go 360 with competition.
Yes.
This is where competition comes in and basically culls the herd. Right. So in your experience with your clients, how have you been able to see this happen? Like, how do you go from value proposition to market opportunity to driving a competitor out of the space?
Yep. Well, one of the things that we believe in is you make your competition irrelevant.
That's a big word.
It is. Because what happens is you go to trade shows and you see what others are doing and you mimic them. And then there's industry mind maps, you know, where they're doing it, we're doing it. In healthcare, we do a lot of work in healthcare. They used to benchmark themselves against each other, not exactly differentiating. So, you know, if you're going to make them irrelevant, the question isn't what are they doing? It's what are customers or non-customers doing? What are unmet needs? How do you find what they could do? Because if you focus on the customer, not on the competition, or the potential customer, I'm always fascinated about who – I had one great story. I had a CEO sit on the telephone in customer service for 2 hours. The calls coming in, Susie kept saying, oh, we don't do that. Nope, we don't do that. He had more calls in 2 hours for what he didn't do than for the stuff he did do.
Ooh.
And finally he said to her, why don't we do that? Mm-hmm. And she said, because you told me that's not our core business. We don't do that. I had one client who set up a we don't do person so that their customer service wasn't interrupted by the we don't do's, but mm-hmm. somebody could actually tackle the we don't do's.
Wow.
And so if you're going to make the competition irrelevant, what are people asking for that you don't do? As opposed to this is what we do and how we do it so well. Okay, that's fine. Now, who could use you? They're searching for you. And in the world of the internet, boy, what you could find from clicks are really powerful possibilities.
Sounds like they were driving themselves out of business in some ways, too.
Well, it was so interesting because he was flat. Business wasn't growing. Mm-hmm. People were coming and asking for stuff he could do. He grew 40% with the don't do's.
I see. Interesting. We're speaking with Dr. Andy Simon. She is a corporate anthropologist. And we're also going to pivot a little bit to some of your recent data. And it's an ongoing theme of this show. It seems to be something of interest to you as well. So I'm positive we're going to have a pretty good discussion around corporate culture, integrating more women into pivotal and decision-making roles. That was part one with Andy Simon. She's president and managing consultant of Simon and Associates. She's also the author of a corporate anthropology book titled On the Brink. We'll have links to Andy Simon's book and other research at facebook.com/Techonomics Radio. Coming up later in the show, we have a look at a new ride-sharing company that has not only deep pockets, but also a fleet of luxury vehicles for far less than you may think possible. And then we have the author of How to Make a Spaceship. So, after we pay these bills, we'll keep things moving with part two of our chat with corporate anthropologist Andy Simon.
Women would prefer more of a collaborative, teamwork, people-oriented culture by a lot. And then I looked at the guys. They wanted the same thing.
That and more after the break. This is Techonomics, and I'm Jason Middleton.